President Trump criticized any Jewish Americans who cast their votes for Democratic candidates. Presidential candidate Elizabeth Warren announced a plan to repeal key parts of the 1994 crime bill. And after teasing the idea of a payroll tax cut, President Trump said today it's no longer on the table. Our question for you this week, do you feel confident about the economy right now, or are you worried about a possible recession? Has the ongoing trade war with China affected your job or business? What does a healthy economy look like to you? What action, if any, do you want to see from the government? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Ginger Gibson is a political correspondent at Reuters. Ginger, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
A lot going on. We'll put our seatbelts on, Ginger, and get rolling here. Let's start with Israel's decision. This seems like a long time ago now, to ban two Democratic representatives, Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar, from visiting the country. Tlaib was offered entry on humanitarian grounds. She declined that. Here she is speaking at a press conference on Monday.
Earlier this month, in fact, 71 other members of Congress traveled to Israel seemingly without incident. What is not common occurrence is members of Congress being barred from entering a country on these fact-finding missions unless they agree to strict set of rules curtailing their rights or being required to submit their itineraries for stop-by-stop pre-approval.
What else did Representative Tlaib and Omar focus on at that press conference, Ginger?
You know, this press conference was, you're right, as sort of the latest, or not even the latest, but
right,
one of the latest iterations in this ongoing fight in which they tried to travel to Israel and were denied entry. But they were only denied entry after President Trump called Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister there, to turn them away. So a bit of a saga. They got up at this press conference and they said that this was an example of them being treated differently than other members of Congress because of their religion, because of the opinions that they hold, because they have been critical of President Trump. And Trump, of course, responded in his own way on Twitter, becoming more critical of both Congresswomen in this ongoing fight. And then, as you said, his remarks about whether or not Jewish people vote for him.
Right. Let's take it to there now. President Trump then has tweeted and said aid to Israel should stay as it is, and had this remark about Jewish Americans who vote for Democrats.
Where has the Democratic Party gone? Where have they gone where they're defending these two people over the state of Israel? And I think any Jewish people that vote for a Democrat, I think it shows either a total lack of knowledge or great disloyalty.
And that's been repeated in print and said out loud, disloyalty. Do we know who President Trump was suggesting those voters were being disloyal to?
He was actually asked on Wednesday who they were being disloyal to, and he said Israel. This was sort of the same comment that Representative Omar was criticized for making earlier this year, saying that Jewish people had divided loyalties between the United States and Israel. And then Trump is saying that if you're Jewish, you have an obligation or a loyalty to Israel. So he has been heavily criticized in the wake of those remarks by this time, particularly Democrats. It was Republicans who criticized Representative Omar when she made those remarks, as well as Democrats. But in this case, Democrats criticizing President Trump for suggesting that there was some loyalty or obligation. And if you look at the voting numbers, something about 75% of Americans' Jewish population voted for Democrats in the last election. So that's a pretty sizable chunk of the electorate to be suggesting as either uninformed or disloyal to another country.
And part of the uproar over both Representative Omar's comments, as you mentioned, and President Trump's comments repeated over the last couple of days, this idea, this accusation of divided loyalty has often been used as part of anti-Semitic attacks here in the United States and around the world, for that matter, right?
That's right. So he is repeating a line that has been criticized, not in a sort of way to criticize that line, but really employing the same argument that he says others are being anti-Semitic and using themselves.
And the president retweeted tweets from Wayne Allen Root, known for promoting conspiracy theories, talking about people in Israel thinking of Trump as the king of Israel, the second coming of God. President Trump has gotten criticism for forwarding that It's kind of weird in Jewish theology statements slash offensive in Jewish theology. I can't speak to that. It's an odd retweet.
It was a very odd decision. It wasn't even a retweet. He was quoting from him. He typed the words out himself.
That's right.
So this wasn't just a hit the retweet button. I mean, he repeated the words. And you're right, calling himself the king, essentially appearing to call himself the king of Israel, or to quote someone calling him the king of Israel, was really surprising. And again, critics said inappropriate, not aligned. I, like you, I'm not sure on the specifics of the Jewish teachings. I wouldn't pretend to be. But this has prompted a lot of criticism that he was being inconsiderate. And you know, we see records of Trump, people who praise Trump get Trump's praise and get Trump's repeating of those praises, even when the praise feels a little bit inappropriate, and that this may be another case of that.
Talking to Ginger Gibson, political correspondent at Reuters, looking at some of the top stories in national politics. A lot of focus moving on, Ginger, to the economy this week. Concerns, President Trump says the economy is good, but he's worried about actions at the Fed. He wants maybe some preventive action for a recession. And we have this timeline, reports that the Trump administration was considering a temporary payroll tax cut. Correct me if I don't have this right. Denial from a White House spokesperson that they were doing that. Then President Trump says, yes, we're considering that. And then today, President Trump says they aren't considering it. Is that the latest on the idea of a payroll tax cut?
That is the latest. You've summed up what is a pretty scattered shot.
That's all in the last 2-3 days, too, right?
It's all in like the last 24 hours that we've heard the president move all over the place on the issue of the payroll tax. And look, the payroll tax is a tax cut that's used really in times of economic concern to juice the economy. There was a payroll tax holiday implemented by President Obama when he took office in 2008 in the wake of the Great Recession, and it was done to put money in the pockets of middle class and lower middle class consumers to try to get the economy moving. Changing this tax would be viewed by economic forecasters, by people in the markets, as an attempt to help rescue the economy. So the president keeps insisting, there's no worry, nothing to see here, everything is fine, the economy is fine. And then this mixed message on whether or not they need to do something to sort of juice the economy is creating a bit of a schizophrenic message out of the White House.
And the president has also consistently said the Federal Reserve should do more. They should bring down the interest rates. And I've seen some economists on both sides of this saying, yeah, if we were worried about a recession, this might not be such a bad idea. The president has continued pretty steadily his criticism of Jerome Powell, the chair of the Fed.
He has. This morning he tweeted that Jerome Powell was like a golfer who couldn't putt. He had no touch. That was a pretty distinctive Trumpian insult for someone to sort of insult them as a bad golfer. But he has been consistently attacking Powell. He really thinks that Powell should be driving those interest rate numbers down, and that his refusal to do so is just the reason that anyone would be concerned about the economy.
And then in a kind of sprawling press availability today, talking about a lot of different issues, the president also addressed the tariff and trade war with China. He briefly referred to himself as the chosen one when it came to renegotiating trade policy with China. What does he have to say about the impact of this trade battle?
You know, two things I'm hearing from the White House, in addition to what President Trump said and talking to sources close to the White House, so the president's very worried about what China is going to do to our economy. So if there is a concern, it's someone else's fault, and it's someone else's fault other than the Fed, maybe China. He's worried that the protests in Hong Kong have made it difficult for him to negotiate with China, and that the continued fight over this trade deal could cause problems. But we heard him say today, as you mentioned, that he's not ready to make a deal, that he's not there yet, and that he thinks that it needs to be a good deal before he strikes it. So further signs that we're a long way from ending this trade war.
Talking to Ginger Gibson, correspondent at Reuters, about some of the week's news in national politics. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. As we heard, President Trump teased the idea of a payroll tax cut, took it off the table. He also criticized the Federal Reserve. How do you feel about the economy and where it's going? Do you worry about a potential recession? Do you think the government or the Federal Reserve should do something to juice the economy, prevent that recession? Is the ongoing trade war with China affecting you in your line of work? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Ginger Gibson, political correspondent at Reuters, looking at the week's top news out of Washington. We were just talking about the economy, what President Trump has had to say the last couple of days. Let's bring on a caller now. Patricia is with us in Madison. Patricia, hi.
Hi there. It's ironic how he's criticizing Jerome Powell now for not lowering the Fed interest rates. He had criticized Janet Yellen, who had been the chairman, because she wasn't raising them fast enough. She kept them low, and he wanted her to increase them, and he didn't appoint her to a second term as Fed chair, so he appointed Jerome Powell. Now, you know, it's just the opposite.
Patricia, thanks for the call. I don't remember that line of argument on Janet Yellen. Ginger, off the top of my head, do you?
Yes, the president, before he took office, was quite critical of Yellen, argued that she should have been drastically increasing the rates and that she wasn't increasing them fast enough as a favor to President Obama, that he wasn't doing enough to improve the economy and that she shouldn't have been helping him. I think we see an example of where President Trump has really struggled to understand the confines of government. While the president appoints the Fed chairman, it is an independent agency. He doesn't get to tell them what to do. In his business background, if he had a head of his hotel division that he didn't like what they were doing, he could fire them. That's not the case when you're the president. Some agencies intentionally are set up to be outside the influence of politics, and the Fed is one of those. And we really see that frustration from the president playing out in all of these tweets and these complaints about the Fed chairman decisions.
Thanks for that call, Patricia. I want to take a couple more callers back to back. Jeremy is with us in Racine. Jeremy, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I believe we will be heading into a recession when, I'm not exactly certain, but it's probably going to happen. But there's one other point I want to make. A lot of people are not talking enough about, I believe, is the demographics involved in our economy. We have a large population of baby boomers who are going to be retiring or have already retired, and that's going to put a lot of burden on the next generations to pick up the slack in 401k investments, things like that. There's going to be a lot of money not going into the stock markets and investments. It's going to be pulling out of that. So taxes are going to have to go up. It's going to change, and it's going to have an effect around the world. And I just wish politicians and people in power who are educating the public should really start talking about demographics and how it's going to play a role in the future.
Jeremy, thanks a lot for the call. We'll bring on Dan now in Green Bay. Dan, hi.
Yeah, hi. I've been in finance business for 25 years. I've rarely seen an economy that's strong in Wisconsin. There's jobs everywhere. Wages are going up. My kid just turned 17, and he had 7 job offers. He has people walking up to him at restaurants offering him a job, and he held out till he got $12 an hour. So whatever they're doing, I just hope they keep doing it. I do support, you know, finally we're doing something about China taking our manufacturing jobs. I do support that, but the economy right now is rip-roaring in Green Bay.
Dan, thanks a lot for the call. A couple different perspectives there, Ginger. And, yeah, a lot of economists see a lot of bright sides and maybe some dark clouds behind the silver linings.
Yes, there are positive indicators of the economy right now. We see unemployment really low. We see continued growth, so we're not in a negative growth situation. I will say one thing about Wisconsin, and we see it in Wisconsin and a couple of other of sort of the lake or the north central states, which is there hasn't been an increase in manufacturing jobs. There's actually been a decrease. But one of the things, as your first caller pointed out, that's keeping the unemployment numbers really low is we see a workforce that's aging out and not being replaced. So unemployment's dropped because people are leaving the workforce. They're retiring, and there are less people, young people behind them to replace it. So Wisconsin specifically, we've seen that phenomenon happening. There aren't more jobs in Wisconsin Wisconsin, there's just less people of working age to do the jobs that are there. And that has had positive influences on the economy, but as was pointed out, has some long-term risks when we don't have people paying into Social Security and we don't have people paying income taxes. And we could see stresses on our government coffers because of that.
Thanks for those calls. We're talking to Ginger Gibson from Reuters about some of the big news in national politics. I want to cover a couple other issues. Ginger, you wrote about this one. Senator Elizabeth Warren, a Democratic candidate for president, put out a plan that would repeal a lot of the 1994 crime bill. What kind of changes is she looking at there?
You know, Warren is really struggling to win African-American voters, and we see her trying to address issues that have been named as important by a significant number of Black or African-American voters. And this one, the issue of criminal justice reform is one of them. Now, the 1994 crime bill that you mentioned, this was a bill that Vice President Biden helped get passed when he was in the Senate, and a bill that has been heavily criticized for contributing to mass incarcerations, for unfairly treating Black individuals different than white individuals. So she wants to mostly do away with the entire law. Part of it was mandatory minimum sentences. If you were caught with drugs, you had to go to jail for a certain amount of time. She thinks the judges should have more decisions in those places.
And that's an issue that's come up a lot as we see conservative and liberal groups getting together to rethink our crime policies, these concerns over mandatory minimums and things like that. Is this something you see getting support among potentially a lot of Democratic primary voters?
Absolutely. This is an bipartisan issue. We have seen legislation move through Congress, maybe one of the only things that we've seen Congress do in the last couple of years on a bipartisan basis. But they did pass one overhaul earlier this year that President Trump signed into law. Democrats think there is more work to be done. So do some Republicans. And I think we're going to continue to see both sides talking about this issue.
And then President Trump canceled or at least indefinitely postponed a visit to the nation of Denmark because the country wasn't willing to sell or even talk about selling Greenland. What happened? What got us here?
This is one of the odder stories of the week. We learned late last week that President Trump was interested in purchasing Greenland and that he was looking at making this purchase. He then came out on Sunday and said that he was less interested in it, that it wasn't a number one priority. But when the head of Denmark, the Denmark prime minister, said that Greenland wasn't for sale, he canceled his meetings with her. And in a press conference on Wednesday, called her nasty for being so dismissive of his efforts to buy Denmark. So maybe it was a little bit more of a priority than he was originally letting on.
Greenland not for sale, apparently, though.
Not for sale, no.
Now, in the wake of mass shootings in El Paso and Dayton, President Trump said he was open to expanding background checks and strengthening red flag laws a few weeks later. What are we hearing now?
He initially said right after the shooting that he was interested in looking at some of the background check issues, some red flag issues, which directly associate with purchasing guns. He has moved away from that, said on Sunday that there were enough background checks. He repeated that again this week. And he called it a slippery slope, which his critics say is a sign that he's adopted the talking points of groups like the NRA. He said again today that there could be some background check loopholes closed, but we're really a long way away in a short period of time from when he said in the initial aftermath of the shooting that he was willing to look at some changes to the background check laws.
Any action in the U.S. Senate on these issues?
Still a long way from any action in Congress. They're on their summer recess right now. They don't come back until September. Mitch McConnell has said he expects there to be discussions about background check laws. We know the House Democrats are coming back a little early to have a hearing, but we're still a long way away from any sign that they could pass a bill out of the Senate.
And speaking of the Senate, Ginger, you wrote about this, I think. A former Trump campaign manager, Corey Lewandowski, says he's considering a run for Senate in the state of New Hampshire. What are Republicans in New Hampshire in particular saying?
There's a bit of a civil war in New Hampshire over the possibility of Corey Lewandowski running from the Senate. for the Senate. We talk to some folks there on the ground, and they tell me that he's a bit of a firebrand, which we already knew, but has some cross views with some folks who are, including the governor, who are sort of Republican mainstays there. And Democrats told me that they're not waiting to see how that Republican civil war plays out. They've been quite aggressive already in attacking Lewandowski. They're not going to gamble that he's the easier Republican to beat and hope he wins the nomination. They think he's the worst option, and they're going to attack him from day one.
And President Trump didn't endorse him, technically, because he's not running, but said some encouraging things. So if he ran and if President Trump backed him, this could be an interesting primary in New Hampshire.
It is. And we have to remember that President Trump won the New Hampshire primary in 2016 by huge margins. I think it was like 30 or 40 points. So he's quite popular in the state. His endorsement would carry a great deal of weight, probably make it near impossible to beat Lewandowski. And so when he said he hoped he got in, he thought it would be great, that was a signal to the rest of the state's Republicans that if Lewandowski runs, he'll have the full support of the president.
Ginger, thanks as always for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
I've been talking to Ginger Gibson, political correspondent at Reuters. She joined us for our weekly look at the latest news in national politics. You can still let us know how you're feeling about the U.S. economy and the Wisconsin economy. With President Trump criticizing the Federal Reserve, the stock market bouncing around some last week, are you worried about a possible recession? What does a healthy economy look like to you? Are you feeling the impact of trade disputes in your job, your business, your community? Do you think that the federal government should be doing stuff, or the Federal Reserve, to prevent the risk of a recession? If so, what do you want to see happen? As always, you can email us ideas@WPR.org or express your thoughts concisely on Twitter. Tweet us @CentralTimeWPR.